Quarterback back at the five, steps up, gets drilled. Yes, sir, he gets mashed. And that is going to be the ball game. 6-5-4-3. They can't snap it. They can't stop it. They can't win it. Alabama wins the ball game.
Derrick Thomas, linebacker, Alabama.
He was a nightmare for people that had to try to prepare for him because he had unique skills.
Just go get the quarterback. I felt sorry for some of those poor tackles that came in and had to go against him because they didn't realize what they were getting themselves into.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Woo! Son, I got to do better than this.
Lights out.
Sacking the cornerback is just like you devastate a city, or you cream a multitude of people. I mean, it's just like you put all offensive players in one bag, and I just take a baseball bat and beat on the bag. So each time he came over there, I tried to tear his damn head off.
Let's play some football. Let's play some football.
The pressure is on. This is Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
Focus on what you want to do, what you want to accomplish. Think about that. Don't think about how you feel, how tired you are, how hot it is. You got to push yourself on the field when you're playing football.
It's my honor to present the National Championship Trophy to Coach Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide.
To me, this is the ultimate team. All these guys bought into everything they needed to do to be the best players that they could be. There's more togetherness on this team than almost any team that we've ever had. And they had to overcome and persevere so much adversity through this season. And they've done it magnificently. And I'm so proud of this group for what they've been able to accomplish in going undefeated and winning the national championship.
Streaming live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and the Tide 100.9 app. Here is your host of Off the Edge, Jacob Harrison.
Hello there. Good morning. Welcome in to Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. Jacob Harrison here with you, digital managing editor of Town Square Media, Tuscaloosa. Mason Woods behind the glass helping us out this morning. Plenty to get into today. Where I want to get started is a conversation that I wanted to squeeze in on Friday, but it didn't happen with the Alabama Vintage gift card giveaway that JJ in Northport won. JJ, I am going to call you today. Just make note of that. When Georgia had its first overall pick in Trayvon Walker and 15 total draft picks in the 2022 NFL draft, they made history. And a lot of people do want to look at Georgia in that scenario and say, okay, either this is a really, really good thing or a really, really bad thing. So we're going to dive into that. Whole lot of NIL stuff and college football expansion, playoff expansion stuff that is coming up and staying prevalent on social media. It's that thing that's probably going to carry a lot of sports radio all the way in and through July. So be prepared for that if you're sick and tired of hearing about it, because just know that some of us are going to be sick and tired of talking about it, and I am one of those people, but we're going to make sure that every single nook and cranny of this thing is understood, explored, and broken down and analyzed, because this is going to get a lot worse before it gets a lot better. But before we get started on the Georgia NFL draft thing, do want to tell you about Alabama Vintage, 2210 University Boulevard, under the Crimson Awning across from City Hall in the heart of downtown T-Town. Go check them out there in store. The stock is constantly rotating, but it's always with quality items, whether it's commemorative t-shirts or jackets or sweaters or shoes, hats, the memorabilia. It's all wonderful. It's all got that perfect vintage feel, commemorating the early 1970s to the early Nick Saban era, whichever place you fit in, as that's my vintage Alabama. Charlie's got the hookup for you there. So go check them out in store. There you can find them online, alabamavtg.com, where you can spend $60 and get free shipping on your order. You can also find them on Instagram at alabamavtg. The Georgia Bulldogs. You know, it's interesting. I saw over the weekend a tweet saying something along the lines of, the past two SEC national champions that weren't Alabama, it took a number one overall pick and a ludicrous amount of NFL talent just to get past Alabama when Alabama was weak, right? Think about that. And I don't make excuses for Alabama. I never do that, right? I try my hardest not to be one of those, if J-Mo played in the Natty, Alabama would have won. Who knows, right? I used to be a Colt McCoy truther, and that was more of an arrogance against Alabama kind of thing, you know, just to kind of be funny.
Colt was scared.
Colt lost his shoulder because of Marcell Dareus. I
mean, didn't stop him from throwing him up on the sideline when Garrett Gilbert was slinging touchdowns.
Touchdowns?
Touchdown.
Okay. Either way, I try to lean off of that because I don't think it's doubly logical. There's no way to prove it, and it's just an excuse, right? But it is when you narrow it down, this is the thing. Alabama was not at full strength against LSU when they came into Tuscaloosa on that day. Tua Tagovailoa battling an ankle injury, right? Then you get to this past January. Alabama had lost a lot. Everybody squares in on J-Mo getting hurt in that game. But Alabama came in without John Metchie, without... You consider this the loss or not, because I still believe the better center played in the game, but without Darian Dalcourt, without Jace McClellan, without Roydell Williams, without Jalen Armour Davis. I mean, you still consider Christopher Allen, and the list is even more expansive than that. Like, there's a lot of dudes that just weren't there. And you can use all of that and still acknowledge the fact that for Georgia in 2021, it took a team that had a first overall caliber player, apparently, in Trayvon Walker, and 15 NFL players, predominantly on the defensive side of the ball, and a hell of a lot of luck out of a 25-year-old quarterback that stands 5'8" and has literally zero aspirations into the NFL. It's not going to be a thing. Three great running backs, George Pickens being healthy, coming back just at the right time, and Brock Bowers, who I think is one of the best tight end prospects ever, period. That dude is insane. And a good offensive line. That's what it took for Georgia to win the national championship after losing the first game handedly. So where do you draw the comparisons, and where does Georgia go from here? Because we're not here to coddle Georgia and give them a pat on the back and say good job and all. We're not here to do that. We're here to look and see what's going next, right? Because what history would want you to believe, and what a lot of Alabama fans I think falsely believe, is that they'll go the way of LSU. That all that talent finally getting on that team, you can't replicate it. Well, yes and no. It will be very difficult for Georgia to win, to replicate the defense they had in 2021. Was the defense they had in 2021 one of the greatest defenses of all time? No. It didn't play a tough enough schedule to be warranted to go up against those kinds of kind of things, right? Was it a great defense, an elite defense? Yeah, absolutely. I think you'd be foolish to argue against that. How about LSU's 2019 offense? One of the greatest of all time? Yes. Unequivocally, 110%. Absolutely. No doubt about it. Argue with a wall till you're blue in the face. Yes. One of the best offenses ever in college football. And that team was tested. That's hard to replicate. That's nearly impossible to replicate. And here's the thing, okay? We've got years off of that where Joe Burrow played in a Super Bowl. One of his receivers from LSU at that time, Ja'Marr Chase, already a top 10 wide receiver in the league, offensive rookie of the year. Top five is a little much. Maybe. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, not an elite back, but still a valuable back for the Kansas City Chiefs, right? A lot of those offensive linemen, still great. You go on the defensive side of the ball. Derek Stingley is just the third overall pick in the NFL draft. Eli Ricks is now here.
Patrick Queen.
Patrick Queen's one of the best linebackers in the NFL. Ke'Lavon Chaisson is a guy that the Jaguars anticipate is going to be a key fixture for them.
Devin White.
Devin White is one of the best linebackers in the NFL. Even more so than Patrick Queen. Justin Jefferson.
That's one of those teams that, you know, 15 years from now, we'll be like, man, there's a lot of those guys still in the NFL.
Yeah, right? We don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case for the Georgia Bulldogs. And a big part of that is you can say, oh, 15 draft picks. Wow, that's impressive. Okay, five of them were in the first round. But one of them, in the form of Trayvon Walker, that is the most unconfident first round pick I can remember as far as like the public to the player. People just are not sure on that. Like, you got to go back to Eric Fisher. Like, when the Chiefs selected a Central Michigan offensive tackle with their first overall pick, to be like, oh, okay, we'll see if he's good. And Eric Fisher was never more than just good. So we'll see if that's the case with Trayvon Walker. Then you go down the list. Is Big Jordan Davis really going to be in the league for another 10 years? I don't know. I mean, he's fantastic. Don't get me wrong. And I think the Eagles are going to absolutely love him. But let's be realistic, you know, based on his position. Then you go down to Devontae Wyatt. Well, how long is it going to take for him to... I don't know about all that. How long is it going to take for Devontae Wyatt to be a main fixture in the Green Bay Packer defense? How about the linebacker that they selected a few picks before him, right? Green Bay's defense isn't bad, but it also isn't great, but they have starters at every single position, yet they keep adding these kind of guys. Same kind of guy that they drafted last year, the cornerback that they drafted from Georgia, and it takes a while for those guys to get on the field. So, we're not going to have immediate evidence on whether or not those guys have their talent translate to the NFL. Because I think that's what's so impressive about the previous two national champions is with the Alabama Crimson Tide in 2020 and the LSU Tigers in 2019 is that both of those teams had immense NFL talent that translated to the NFL really well. We still have to wait and see what the picture is for Georgia on that. But the other part of it is the gap that definitely exists. Even if Georgia fans spent all weekend apparently on social media trying to just to say that those 41 years don't matter to them anymore, like you can't hurt them, it's still a thing that exists. There was a gap that existed for LSU, and you can ignore that gap if you want to. But it'll bite you in the ass when you actually start to try to create some consistency. Because, look, there was a gap that existed for Alabama too, right? But Nick Saban created an environment that was able to get past that and not focus on the fact that you just had one in the past 20-whatever years, right? No, now you got one. Now let's focus on getting the next one. And I think that's an approach that Kirby Smart is going to take. It was not the kind of approach that existed under Ed Orgeron at LSU. That's why LSU completely fell apart. On top of the sexual allegations that condemned the school, they did not have the ability to recuperate and rebuild a program within a single season to get right back to where it was supposed to be. And he was gone by the end of the year come the next season. That is bizarre. And now, all right, you know, 2 years, whatever. Brian Kelly is not going to be the guy to resolve that issue either way. So you look over the state into Georgia. And LSU has the same advantage, but they're not able to take quite as good of an advantage of it because Texas and Alabama steal from Louisiana a lot. Georgia gets a lot of their own talent to stay. If I were to give you one guess without the context of this conversation as to who the top three states in the country that had players drafted into this last year's this season's NFL draft, you would probably say a mixture of Texas, California, and what? Georgia. If not Georgia, you'd probably say something like Florida or whatever, and you'd be totally justified on that. But with context of this conversation, Georgia was the second most picks in the draft at 30 behind Texas's 32. So there's not even a gap that really exists there. And a lot of those guys were from the state of Georgia and went to Georgia. So the one thing that Kirby Smart is going to be able to continuously do is recruit really well, especially in this day and age of college football, which we'll get to in a moment. Kirby Smart's a great recruiter. Ed Orgeron was an okay recruiter that had the right talent at the right time. I didn't think that was going to be the case because I thought he was a great recruiter. A lot of us thought that, and we were wrong. That's why it all fell apart. Kirby has maintained that consistency that existed during the gap of national championships. And that's what kind of makes him mundane, but also special at the same time. Because if he was not steadily improving, he'd be stagnant. There would be no national championship. There would be no getting to the national championship. It would have been the same thing that existed under Mark Richt. But that's not the case. We can't acknowledge that within the period of the gap without acknowledging the fact that in 2017 they got to the Natty and in 2022 they won the Natty. You can't just throw a 41-year joke at Georgia anymore because they're right. At least for the next calendar year, it's not going to hurt them. If they stumble a little bit next year and have a down year, they're probably going to live with it because they know Kirby's not going to fall off the face of the earth like Ed Orgeron did. They know that Kirby has some instilled consistency within him, an understanding of where college football is going, and youth on his side, not to mention being a product of the program itself. He is ingrained, and he's not going anywhere. So don't sit back for the next 4 months saying, well, Georgia's not going to be as good as they were last year. Georgia's going to go the same way LSU did. 1 year wonders. Because they're not. They're not going to do that. I don't anticipate Georgia will be quite as much of a fixture in the national championship picture next year, based off the talent that they lost, based on who's going to be the quarterback for that team next year. Stetson Bennett. But they're not going to be LSU. They're not going to fall off the face of the planet. And with patience and time, Kirby Smart can turn what is going on in Georgia, where he doesn't have to recruit all over the country. He can stay in Georgia, stay in Florida, stay in the Carolinas, and pull in those five stars from Texas and Louisiana, and not have to get super crazy with it. The one thing Kirby's got to improve on, and it's the one thing that's going to bite him once Arch Manning makes his decision on wherever it is that he decides to go, he's got to find a way to evolve the way that he recruits his offense and allow somebody to come in and take control of that offense, make it modern, make it quarterback friendly, make it a place where all the quarterbacks and all the wide receivers want to play. Make Georgia a place where transfers come in and don't see what happened to JT Daniels. Where transfers come in and they're not scared of losing their job to a 5'8" Stetson Bennett. Because that's the nature of college football right now. And it's a part that Kirby is missing. If he ever evolves past that, once Nick is gone, once Nick retires, it's Kirby's playground at that point. So, yeah, not going to fall off the face of the earth. Not, in my opinion, not going to be solely the fixture of the national championship conversation this year, but give him another 3 or 4 years. See if he can turn the evolutionary clock in his favor for that offense. And Georgia's going to be a real problem for a long time. That's what you can take out of that those 15 draft picks. He's going to have the consistency. He's still going to recruit defense. Georgia's not going anywhere, but it is going to take time for them to be that next dynasty if that's what they're going to be. Time and evolution. Things that Nick Saban has mastered throughout his time here at Alabama. That's what it's going to take. And that's why, as an Alabama fan, you should be equal parts not worried about Georgia, but keep an eye on them. Know what's going on the other side of the division. And know that when Texas and Oklahoma get here, it will have less of an impact on Georgia than it will on Alabama. So there is something there that helps Georgia be what it wants to be what it thinks it is right now in the future. And that is a state of consistency, even through that gap that did not exist at LSU. LSU has been through too many roller coasters. Georgia's got a lot of things going on in their favor. And this isn't a, you know, let's praise and celebrate Georgia football. This is more of a just keep an eye on what's going on out in the East. That's all it is. We'll take a break, come back, continue the conversation. If you want to join the show, you're more than welcome. 205-342-9904. The NCAA says that they're going to start cracking down on these NIL collectives. We'll talk about it next here on Off the Edge. Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A warm afternoon with a sunny sky, the high today 83, clear tonight with the low at 57. Tomorrow, sunny weather continues, the high 87. Wednesday and Thursday, lots of sunshine both days, highs between 88 and 91. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 74 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Follow Off the Edge on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube for live streams and instant analysis. Off the Edge with Jacob Harrison continues.
Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. I think it's adorable that the NCAA is acting as if they're going to crack down on anything. A quote from a sports agent, one Russell Smith, represents about 80 college athletes in the Athletics article about the NCAA preparing to crack down on booster involvement in NIL lawyers. Sports agents. how many times the NCAA does not understand what it really needs to do. You know how Netflix right now, like, has half, really a third of as many movies as it's had, and it's not doing a solid job with a lot of its original productions that aren't Stranger Things. Like, it's, as a platform, like, it is really struggling right now. And there's that news about Netflix, and then there's the other news that they're going to raise prices and crack down on people sharing accounts. You know how you make people not want to be a part of your product? You give them less product for a higher price and take away the convenience of your product. That's what the NCAA thinks they can do. They think they can run college athletics that way, because the government said that your model to not pay these athletes or not allow these athletes to be compensated in some form or fashion, we don't care how, is flatly illegal. And yet the NCAA, in all of its infinite power and wisdom, says, okay, well, for the past 10 months, we haven't done a very good job of handling the landscape of recruiting. We don't really know why, outside of the fact that we just don't have any power. But we have decided to let everything slide and everything pass. If you want to do it and it's NIL, go for it. But in May of 2022, we have decided that not only is our president, Mark Emmert, going to step down in 14 months, but that we are going to evolve. And when we evolve, maybe, just maybe, we will have rules and regulations surrounding NIL, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's the way it's going to be. That's the way it's going to be. And that's really funny, because here's this quote from an attorney who represents several football recruits that have landed 6- and 7-figure deals with school-specific booster collectives. Quote, the moment the NCAA comes to try to interfere with one of my clients' deals, the next day is the moment they get hit with an antitrust lawsuit. They're saying there's a whole class of people, boosters, who can't participate in the market for athletes' NIL rights. That'd be like saying red-haired people can't buy meat. That's antitrust. And guess who's right in this scenario? It is the lawyer. Shocker. And you'd think the NCAA and all of its infinite suits and wisdom would have its own lawyers that are like, hey, bro, like, you know, maybe think about what you're doing here. We've had this conversation too many times. The fact that college football, college athletics in general, is on television, you buy products, the networks sell advertisement, everything about it is absolutely as for profit as you can possibly be. The one thing that was lacking was the participants of the product were not getting paid. Everything else about that screams professionalism, right? And what I love is another article, this one by Ivan Mizell, over on on3.com. And I can't believe I'm doing this, but Jack Schwarber, the athletic director for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, says, somebody tell me the positive value of amateurism. That is not a question that had crossed my mind before, but one that I wish would have, because it is a profoundly intelligent question that is more of a statement. Because I make the challenge, what is the positive value of amateurism? Control? Now, maybe that's just my point of view, because I see the world of amateurism. And I see something, if it's amateurism, if it's at all amateur, what is the point of watching it? What is the point of buying it? Because what you say in amateur is not quality, right? not experienced to the full quality. What is the positive value of calling college athletes amateurs? When in high school, they were the same thing. In high school, you were an amateur. You were a minor. You were not expected to do very much concerning your team outside of what you put into it, right? Like, sure, I mean, you play on an organization. There are certain expectations that come with it, but you're not bound to the program, right? If you as a 10th grader in high school say, well, I'm just not playing football anymore. That's it. You go tell the coach, hey, I'm done. Deuces, good luck. I don't want to do this anymore. It's not for me, whatever. That's it. Now you're just a regular high school student. In college football, it's not really a thing, especially not with athlete, you know, scholarship athletes. It's not a thing. You're bound to the program, and you have expectations that are set for you based on a set of guidelines and rules and thoughts and traditions that you're supposed to do certain things. And it's practically like a job at that point. These athletes pour in more time at their work than I do into mine. Here's the continuation of that argument from Schwarbrick to really put it into perspective. Did anybody ever argue the babysitter had a better experience if he or she didn't get paid? Sure, you got the experience. You know, you got to do something nice for somebody. Probably a lot better if you got paid for doing what you were asked to do, though, right? It's a bizarre situation where the NCAA now wanting to crack down on these collectives and saying, well, we said all along the boosters couldn't be involved. They're not allowed to get involved. We can't have them get involved. It would be cheating. And I ask now, why? Because if you're in a space like college football's, the one excuse for why you could say it is completely and utterly unfair for collectives to exist and for those collectives to be backed by boosters is because of the smaller programs that don't have that kind of money. And when you do that, well, what you can suggest are possible changes. And one of the possible changes that I saw in the Mizell article is splitting FBS. Schools that want to operate like a professional entity, the Alabama Crimson Tides, the Ohio States, the whatevers, and the schools that want to stick with a more traditional college model. I can't name one. I don't know of one that wants to exist that way, but maybe Vanderbilt football, right? You split those off so that everybody's intentions are understood. And if you don't split that off, fine. Division II and Division III are an option for any coach that thinks it's just the worst thing in the world for a player to get paid. Those players can still get paid because they're under the NCAA, but they're not going to get paid nearly as much. But you create it as a league, and this from Sonny Dykes. If you want to play in the Premier League, you put in $50 million a year, you have a salary cap of $50 million, you decide how you want to break it up, the players get paid. What's wrong with that? It's still Alabama football on the field. There's still people coming to Alabama for the same reasons they'd been coming to Alabama since Nick Saban got here. What's wrong with that? Oh, it's the principle. It's the tradition. It's the value. It's this, that, and the other thing. Look, you don't have to like it. I'm not totally sure that I like that. And you've probably heard me jumble back and forth a little bit in the Jordan Addison thing. I'm not so sure that I've made total sense of the Jordan Addison thing and where I truly stand on it. But wouldn't that situation be able to be handled correctly if there was a stable structure of what college football is really supposed to look like? Because these two articles have me agreeing with people that I just generally just don't ever agree with. David Shaw, Stanford coach, says, he did some word dancing, but this is a quote that I agree with. I am in favor of structure and consistent rules and codes of conduct on all parties that hopefully will come back to make more sense of the college sports world. I fully agree with that. I like NIL. I don't like where it's at right now. I like the transfer portal. I don't like where it's at right now. Let's have some structure and some consistent rules, a calendar that makes sense for all of these things to exist in. And I think most people would agree with that. Well, what has to happen there is the NCAA has to choose to evolve into something that can do that. And I don't think it wants to. I think it would be more interested in nailing down some of the sense of traditions, some of the sense of values that exist in college athletics that allow them to have a bigger piece of the pie and have the control that they have had than to evolve into something that works. But I continue to go through these articles, and I strongly suggest people read them. How about a Miami mega booster, John Ruiz? $800,000 NIL deal for a men's basketball player for the Miami Hurricanes. Quote, how can you be punished as a member school for the actions of those you can't really control? Meaning, how do you punish the player for entering an NIL deal? For doing exactly what is allowed of them. How do you punish the booster for doing exactly what is allowed of them just through a different means? Are the collectives really that bad? Is the point. Is it safer? Is it better for NIL for the boosters to work through collectives and through the compliance of the university to the players, or for the players and the boosters to work independently? Which is better? Does it matter in the world of NIL? I think what matters is a state of construct and for the university to know what its players are getting into. If you go after the boosters, which is what the NCAA wants to do, here's what you're doing. Limiting compensation. And that doesn't make any sense. As I've said a gazillion times on this show, is the money follows the elite of college football. If you're the best, it's because you poured money into it and you get money on the other side of that. And when your university spits out excellent talent in athletics and also spits out very wealthy academics that want to pour money back into the athletics, why is it the kid's fault? Why is it the athlete's fault, the current athlete, the recruits? Why is it their fault that those people want to give that money back in? Because that's how college football has always worked. That's how college sports have always worked. Boosters, that's how you get the money back. And the bizarre part of all of that is the NCAA is not allowed, based off of what the government said, what Brett Kavanaugh said about their model and it being flatly illegal, to limit these players' compensation, that it's antitrust. And for you to tell one entity that has just as much money, if not more, yes, you can pay this player, but not this entity, because it has a diploma, wow, that just slipped right on by me. It has a fancy sheet of paper with that university's logo on it. You can't pay that player. That's backwards. That's messed up, and it's out of the spirit, not only of NIL, but of the country, of the capitalistic nature of what this is supposed to be. Like I said, if you want a world where it's straight up amateurism, guys are only playing for the love of the sport, go watch Division II football. Go watch Division III football, because those guys are just desperate to be on the field. Not the most talented. The football is not going to be great. But if that's what you love college football for so much, those are the schools you should be watching. Oh, but I have a natural tie to Alabama. Well, that natural tie ain't going nowhere just because of the circumstances for which somebody's wearing that crimson uniform. Because that has been what's going on this whole time. And the really bizarre aspect of it all is you see those coaches leaving for one reason or another because of the lack of structure that causes all the chaos within the transfer portal and all the chaos in NIL. I think Kirby Smart brought up a really valid point in the Ivan Manziel article. Bronco Mendenhall, Matt Luke, passionate coaches, they're just leaving. They're just gone because they have to deal with all this crap because the NCAA didn't get off their hands and create something that could work, that should work. Here's the one thing that I don't agree with that Jack Swarbrick said. Is that we as fans, as the NCAA, as college football players and administrators and whatever, that we had to break college athletics to fix it. No. It was already broken because of its lack of foundation. Because what the NCAA did 100 years ago was put four by fours in the dirt to make a square and then built a house out of it. And eventually erosion and the weather and water and the earth and wind and rain and everything else had finally distorted that house into something completely unrecognizable with no ability to stand on its own. And then the homeowners association came in and said, hey, it's illegal for you to have this residency, this property, whatever type it may be, without a concrete foundation. You need to solve this problem right now. And what the NCAA tried to do was pour a concrete slab completely adjacent to the property and then pick up the property in all of its years of degradation and place it on the foundation. And it did not hold its integrity. It could not stay together with rusty nails and rotted wood. It had begun to crumble and crumble and crumble. And every time these boosters and those with money who have been working through the cracks of that property for years, for decades. Now they just go up to him and be like, well, what are you going to do about it? And take exactly what they need and make it work for themselves. Because it's what's right for the player, because it's what's necessary for the existence of the sport to be what it is, to be as exciting as it is, for people to have the arguments of college football playoff expansion. Should it expand? Is the regular season more important? Yada, yada, yada. You know what? None of that would be a thing if we couldn't have elite programs. If we couldn't have these players go where they want to be to have the opportunity to be what they want to be as football players, as athletes. It's not the booster's fault. It's the NCAA's fault. It continues to be the NCAA's fault. And until the NCAA decides to take a trip to Lowe's or Home Depot, whatever your choice, and go buy some actual material and hire some actual contractors and some actual builders and carpenters and everything else that you need to actually build that property, they're just going to have a foundation that exists because the government said it had to. And it'll never improve. It'll never get better. It'll never turn into and exist as something that needs to. And then that's when you go the way of what Josh Pate kind of warned us about baseball and boxing and horse racing. To where you only talk about who won. You only talk about Red Strike because he won the one race. But you don't talk about the rest of them because it don't matter. That's where you get into that dangerous situation. That's all I'm talking about NIL today. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Close down the show here on Off the Edge. Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A warm afternoon with a sunny sky, the high today 83, clear tonight with the low at 57. Tomorrow, sunny weather continues, the high 87. Wednesday and Thursday, lots of sunshine both days, highs between 88 and 91. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 74 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You're listening to Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
Back here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. Said that was all I was going to say on NIL. I lied. Sonny Dykes says a lot of good things in the On 3 article by Ivan Mizeau. And I think this is kind of the crux of a lot of it. And then you just kind of have to soak in these statements. There's a way to do it where it benefits everybody. Instead of trying so hard just to protect the way it's always been, let's figure out the best way to protect the players in the institution. Let's find a way to make it all make sense. And that's when he moves on into that. You know, there's different ways to do this and X, Y, and Z. You could split them. You could have a salary cap. You could do all of these different types of things. And actually create something that makes sense and not have this thing where the NCAA comes after athletes and comes after boosters that are just going to result in lawsuits that aren't going to be resolved within the time period of the athlete's time at the university, right? These things where it doesn't affect the booster. It doesn't affect the NCAA. Nobody wins, nothing's resolved, and nothing is solved, period, as far as the overarching problem. And see, here's the thing, is when Mark Emmert announced that he was going to be stepping down next July, I was like, okay, well, that gives them a little bit over a year to come up with something. Come up, if all it is just a calendar for when you can sign your NIL deals or when you can enter the transfer portal or whatever, a timeline for certain changes to take place, you know, some sort of game plan. you know, and this is where most businesses would have an investors meeting and be like, this is what we're going to do. Well, the NCAA doesn't do that apparently. So where instead of us getting some sort of investment plans, a timeline, a understanding of what is to come for college athletics, we instead get this just a couple of days later, just a little bit more than 2 weeks later from that announcement, we get this sad attempt to grab back at the power that is not there. And it's really rather pathetic on the NCAA's part. All right, that'll do it for the show today. I hope everybody had a great Mother's Day yesterday. Good to report that my wife did, in fact, have a good Mother's Day yesterday. But that led to a very angry and sad, a tired toddler who did not sleep well last night, which meant that I didn't sleep well because apparently when he grows up, he's going to be in the UFC because he's really good at axe kicks. You ever been axe kicked in the gut while you're asleep? That's not fun. So I'm going to go figure out how to wake up and get the rest of my day rolling. The Jay Barker Show is up next for the rest of you. Enjoy your Monday. Roll Tide, everybody.